Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning. I'm Danny Cunningham, filling in for Ken Carmen and Anthony Lima right here on 92.3 The Fan, taking you up until 10 o'clock this morning. And I think that we have our national championship game in college football all set after last night. I understand that there are still semifinal games that are yet to be played, but I think that we are looking right in the eyes at an Ohio State Notre Dame national championship game. After watching that game last night between Notre Dame and Georgia, I don't see how Penn State beats that Notre Dame team, and I do not see how Texas is going to beat that Ohio State team. I think that we are looking at another Midwest showdown that we saw each of the last 2 years in the regular season. I think that's going to be our national championship game, and I think that if there's a team left that has a chance to beat Ohio State, I don't think it's a good chance. I really don't. But I think if there's a team left with a chance to beat Ohio State and keep them from winning a national championship, I think it's Notre Dame. You watch what that defense did against a Georgia offense that is certainly not as talented as Ohio State's, but that was a Notre Dame team that was able to, what I thought was most impressive about yesterday for them was they were able to out-physical and I thought out-speed Georgia, which you don't see happen. Maybe it doesn't mean more in the SEC anymore the way that it used to, but I think that this is going to be the national championship. I think we are going to see Ohio State take on Notre Dame on January 20th in Atlanta, and Ohio State is probably going to win the national championship. Now, the question that I keep kind of coming back to in my mind is, would Georgia have been the team that maybe had a better chance to prevent that for Ohio State? Or is this going to be the best matchup? I don't know the answer to that. We're not going to find out until that game is actually played. And maybe I'm getting ahead of myself. Maybe Texas is going to find a way to beat Ohio State. Maybe Penn State's going to find a way to beat Notre Dame. I don't see how either of those things are going to happen. And I do think that there's some interesting stuff with the college football playoff that is worth talking about this morning, because after last night, all four teams that got the automatic buys into the second round, into the quarterfinals, lost. All five teams. And of course, three of those four teams would have made the playoffs anyways. I don't think Arizona State would have made the playoffs without the automatic qualifier you get for winning your conference. Oddly enough, they played in the best game of the quarterfinal, but the five teams that won their conference and were automatically put into the playoffs, they went 0-5. I just wonder if we're staring because of what happened, maybe not specifically last night, but what happened over the course of the last couple of days, if we're looking at this thing already needing to be changed. Because you look at Oregon is going to be the team that feels like they have the biggest gripe having to face Ohio State as their first game, despite, and I get it, like, it's hard to look at Ohio State and what happened at the end of the regular season for them and say, no, that team should still have a bye that still has one of the four best resumes. Like, I don't see it there. But Oregon got screwed by that. Ohio State probably should have been seeded around 7 or 8. And Oregon was the team that felt that wrath. But I wonder if this is going to have to change. There's a lot to take away from last night. But ultimately, guys, I think that this national championship game is going to be Ohio State. It's going to be Notre Dame. It's going to be a game that I think does incredible numbers. When you talk about television ratings, it is going to be absolutely through the roof. This has a chance to be one of the most watched games in college football history because of the size, the sheer size of these two fan bases. And I think my favorite part of it is that, man, it's going to upset the South. The South did everything to make it so that the SEC would still be king. And what we are seeing now is that it turns out when everyone's allowed to pay players, maybe the SEC isn't as good. Maybe it doesn't mean more there anymore the way that it has forever. But you see the SEC arguing still, and Lane Kiffin being on Twitter throughout the first round saying that, oh, Ole Miss should be in, or, you know, Alabama should have been in instead of SMU. Okay, maybe, but who's still standing? There's one SEC team left, and that team was in the Big 12 last year. Like, it's a perfect start, I think, to the 12-team playoff. But unfortunately, guys, I think it's going to be a start that means we change what the 12-team playoff is going to look like moving forward. I don't think that this same exact format, and I understand, listen, they're going to expand because this is all about money. It's only going to be 12 teams for a few years. They're going to boost it up to 16 so that we can get more SEC teams in and we can protect their precious integrity and feelings, because that's really what college football is about. It's about money, and it's about making the South feel good about something. But I think last night was probably a big step in the SEC not being kings anymore. I think that changed, and I think it's going to continue to change, because we are going to get, in all likelihood, in all Midwest, maybe in all Big Ten national championship game, and that I think is going to be something that absolutely destroys the way people in the South feel about the sports, and it's going to lead to change. It's going to lead to more change because they're going to want to get more SEC teams in, so these types of things don't happen. But as someone that lives in the state of Ohio, I couldn't be happier with what has happened so far in this playoff.
Do you think revisionist history, especially if you're an Oregon fan this morning, don't you? I mean, Ohio State probably should have been the 6th seed, and Penn State should have been the 8th seed, and that would have changed.
Right, right. Or
I don't know that it changes the teams. Well, you know, Oregon probably beats Penn State then.
Well, I mean, so they did do 2 weeks before.
Yeah.
And I do think that the interesting aspect of this is the automatic buys. Because obviously Ohio State was never the 8th best team in the country. They've, even with the 2 losses, like, they've been better than that. Their AP ranking says that they're better than that. Their college football playoff ranking says that they're better than that. They're the number 8 seed because you had to
give. They've always had them there, right? They've always had them in that spot, even when they were the seed in the AP poll.
They would have been number 5 then, right? So they would be facing Oregon most likely coming up in the semifinal game, which is something that, you know, when you reach the semifinals, I think you kind of have to be okay with how things fall. Right, you, at that point in the tournament, you should be expecting to play a team that is capable of winning the national championship. When in the quarterfinals, maybe not. That's why, truthfully, if Oregon loses to Penn State in the Big Ten championship game a month ago, they're in a much better spot, because instead of having to face Ohio State in their first game, they end up facing Clemson because they get the 5 seed. So they face Clemson in the first round. And then they face Arizona State in the second round, and that is a cakewalk. Like, look at how Penn State got to where Penn State is. I don't think Penn State's all that good of a team. I think of the 3 teams left, or of the 4 teams left, there are 3 of them that are capable of winning the national championship this year. Penn State is not one of them, because Penn State did nothing all year and was rewarded with the easiest path to the semifinals, having to face SMU, who wasn't very good, and then a Boise State team who had a really good running back and nothing else. Like, this is something that, because of what happened to Oregon, because of what happened to the South, and because of what Penn State was handed to them, I think we're going to see change. I think that this is going to look different next year, but what we're going to see this year is the North dominate. There's not a team from the Southeast. I'm sorry, Texas is a Southwest school. There's not a team from the Southeast in the first ever semifinals. I don't care if Texas is in the SEC. They're not an SEC team. That's not SEC country in Austin, Texas. It's not. There's not an SEC city in the semifinals. As someone in the North, that makes me ecstatic. It does. But I also think that I can see the writing on the wall. This is going to change. This is going to be something that is different. And there's going to be a case for a lot of people that this system is broken already. Now, you can also push back and say, well, there have been 8 games played so far in the college football playoffs this year, and the betting favorite has won all 8 of them. The betting favorite is 7-1 against the spread, with the only team that covered as an underdog being Arizona State in that overtime game on New Year's Day against Texas. Other than that, because Notre Dame was the team last night that was favored. They were a 1.5-point favorite when the books closed at kickoff. Like, that was a team that was expected to win that game, and they went out and did that. Ohio State, despite being the 8 seed, they were the favorite over number 1 overall at Oregon. Like, that's... Vegas has been right so far, But all this is going to keep doing is upset the folks that really care most about the SEC. And I think as someone in the North, that should be something you're really excited about. I also think if you're an Ohio State fan, you're smiling today. I do. Even if Georgia would have won, I think you'd feel the same way. I think both of these teams, both of those teams last night were really good. But I don't know if Ohio State, if the Ohio State team that we saw against Oregon shows up, if the Ohio State team we saw against Tennessee shows up, I don't see how they don't win the national championship. Now, conversely, if the Ohio State team that we saw against Michigan shows up, they're going to lose to Texas. I don't know which Ohio State. That's the biggest concern with Ohio State is their consistency. They've not been the most consistent team. They are the best team, but they've not been the most consistent team. If the good version of Ohio State shows up, they're winning the national championship. That's where I'm at after last.
Well, you got to think Chip Kelly learned his lesson after Michigan.
One would think, but
when you have Jeremiah Smith on the field, you don't not throw to Jeremiah Smith as much as you can, right?
Right. So here, I guess the issue is here. So go back in the Penn State game, and I just said I don't think Penn State is very good. Like, I do not believe in Penn State as a team. I do not believe in Penn State as a program.
The only thing they have going for them for me is that a local kid is the quarterback.
Right.
That's the only
right.
thing.
Drew Aller from Medina, Ohio.
The only reason that I would care about them at all.
But I don't look at them and say that's a national championship caliber team. I think that they are a team that is pretty on par with who Michigan is this year. Penn State just had an easier schedule. Like, Penn State lost to the good teams they played. Right? They played Oregon. Yeah. They lost that game. They played Ohio State. They lost that game. They didn't play anybody else. They had a cakewalk of the rest of the schedule. Their next toughest game was a USC team that finished 6-6, and they needed overtime to win that game. So, no, I don't think Penn State's that good, but go back and look at what happened in that Ohio State game. Ohio State kind of handled them the same way they handled Michigan. And I think the biggest question I have about Ohio State is, would they do that against Notre Dame too? Would they try and set out? Because what has happened with Ryan Day, you know, you saw it last year when Ohio State played Notre Dame. Lou Holtz said, Notre Dame's tougher than Ohio State. So what was the only thing Ryan Day cared about? Proving Lou Holtz wrong. He wants to prove Michigan wrong, which is why he can't beat Michigan, because Michigan is better at the stuff they do well. Ohio State's better at everything else, but they refuse to do that because they want to prove we're better at your brand of football. That's what they want to prove. You know what they did against Oregon? They proved against Oregon that they're better at their brand of football than Oregon is. But the question I have is, are they going to try and do that against Penn State again? Which, if that's the case, they'll beat Penn State if Penn State gets by Notre Dame. Are they going to try and do that against Notre Dame? That would be the worry if you're an Ohio State fan, is if they try and, hey, we want to out-tough Notre Dame. We want to out-physical Notre Dame. Because if they do that, that's where I think they could get into trouble. That could be the problem for them. That instead of throwing the ball to Jeremiah Smith every play of the game, because watching him, I think the best comparison that I've settled on with watching Jeremiah Smith is, I remember I was in college at this point, 2013, watching the Cleveland Browns play. And that was the year Josh Gordon just absolutely rewrote the team record book for receiving yards. He had over 1,600 yards in 14 games that he played.
With Brandon Whedon as a quarterback.
And Jason Campbell and Brian Hoyer. Yes. Like, it was a rotating cast of clowns playing quarterback for him. And he was utterly dominant. And I'm not comparing Will Howard to those guys, but that's what I feel like watching Jeremiah Smith. I'd be watching those Browns games and I'm just like, why cannot the Browns throw the ball to Josh Gordon every single play? Like, that's what I felt like offensively. And I understand Ohio State's weaponry on offense is much different than that Browns team is. Like, Jeremiah Smith is the equivalent to Josh Gordon, but they also, you know, the next best receiver for the Browns was nowhere close to what Emeka Ebuka is or Carnell Tate is for Ohio State. But you watch that kid play. It's just like, why do they not throw him the ball 15 times a game? And if Chip Kelly is going to do that in their final two remaining games, there's not a way they lose. But if he's going to try and prove that, no, we can out-tough teams, because truthfully, Texas plays a relatively similar brand of football to Michigan. They're really good on the inside, especially defensively. Defensively, they're awesome. They do a lot of things similarly to what Michigan does. Now, they're more explosive offensively. They have a quarterback with a pulse, which Michigan has not had all year. But that's where that would be. I think that should be the biggest worry for Ohio State fans right now, is that maybe they revert back to who they were. But if they don't do that, I don't really see how they don't win the national championship. I don't see that world. If they just take care of business and give the football to their best players, I think they're in great shape. I really, really do. I think that they're in great shape, and I think they're going to be national champions. But I think if there's one team left that can beat them, we saw that team kick the crap out of Georgia last night physically, that team, of course, being Notre Dame.
Now the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima give their thoughts on what you might have missed about last night.
The quarterfinals are finished in the college football playoff as Notre Dame beats Georgia 23-10 in the Sugar Bowl down in New Orleans. Of course, Notre Dame now will move on to take on Penn State in the semifinals in the Orange Bowl next week.
And it's the best Notre Dame team we've seen in a very long time. 13 wins is the school record now all by itself, and they hope they have two more to go.
That game will be Thursday as of now in Miami against Penn State. I was really impressed with how physical Notre Dame was, how fast Notre Dame was. I was really impressed against Georgia in that game.
That was courtesy of ESPN.
That was courtesy of ESPN. Thank you. Sorry about that.
Go ahead. My bad. Back to your impressiveness.
Well, let's not get carried away there.
I mean, you're the one wearing the Notre Dame hoodie in 2 days in a row.
Man, I was happy. Well, how could I not?
No, I'm.
How could I not?
I'm glad for you.
I'm happy for me, too.
As a guy who cheers for a football team that is not associated with this town, I get it. It's hard sometimes.
It's not easy. It's not been an easy life.
The transition has definitely changed in the last 5 years for me, where everyone would see me and my Chiefs stuff and go, "Hey, way to go, Chiefs!" Too, they hate me. They spit at me. They boo.
Yeah, I hope. Well,
maybe you'll get there one day with Notre Dame, depending on how
they hate me.
Depending
too.
How this tournament turns out.
No, they've always hated. Yeah, they've always hated me. That's fine though. But they are 23-10 winners over Georgia. We'll move on to take on Penn State in the Orange Bowl. The Browns will have starting quarterback number 40. This weekend as they take on the Baltimore Ravens in their season finale on Saturday at 4:30.
Who will be your starting quarterback?
Yeah, well, I'm not going to announce it right this minute. I want to talk to those guys about the plan, and then I'll let you guys know.
Do you still plan to use both?
I do.
Quarterback.
Is that something that you will be informing them of, like, today? Or
yeah.
Today.
Well, about 20 minutes after that press conference, news broke that Bailey Zappe going to be the starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. I don't know why.
Were they standing outside of the press conference?
They must have been.
Waiting.
I mean, I don't know why Kevin Stefanski. And
listen, okay to tell him through the press conference.
Especially in this situation. If there's a competitive advantage to be had and you want to keep things quiet as a coach, I get it. I totally understand not wanting to tip your hand before you have to tip your hand. I get that. You're 3-13, man. Like, there's no competitive advantage to be gained anywhere in this game.
Myles Garrett told me yesterday that he would rather beat the Ravens than get the sack king crown this year.
He's lying. There's no way he's telling the truth.
He said it.
He's lying. There's no way he's telling the truth.
Why would Myles Garrett lie to us?
Why would he tell the truth about that? There's no way that's true. I'm sorry. Of course, Myles Garrett. Like, these guys want to win. But the difference for them between finishing 3-14 and 4-13 versus Myles Garrett maybe winning the sack title and maybe being defensive player of the year, if I'm Myles, I know where I'm going. And it's not, oh, I'm doing everything I can to win the game. Would winning the game be a byproduct of maybe having 3 sacks of Lamar Jackson? Sure. But let's be real here. Like, that's not where this is going. That's not what this is going to be. Come on.
It's okay. You don't believe Miles? That's fine.
No,
that's
I don't. And he's not paid to tell the truth. That's fine. Those guys are not paid to tell the truth. I will always say that. Kevin Stefanski, did he tell somebody before yesterday's press conference who the starting quarterback was going to be? Probably. It's not in Kevin Stefanski's job description to tell the truth to the media.
He wouldn't do that.
You think Andrew Berry tells the truth every time he speaks?
He wanted to wait. He had to go evaluate that tape one more time.
What did that tape show? Pain?
Yes.
I have to start somebody. It's not, oh, this guy deserves, someone's got to start. That's where the Browns are at with quarterback position right now. Someone has to start. Bailey Zappe going to be starting quarterback number 40 for the Browns since returning.
If you don't already know what Daryl's lead-in music is at 8, then you didn't listen to the show yesterday.
He had some bad jokes yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
He had some real bad jokes yesterday. Leave it to Daryl to do that. Yesterday, we did get All-Star voting. First returns in the NBA. Cleveland Cavaliers guard Donovan Mitchell, second among Eastern Conference guards, only trailing LaMelo Ball. Evan Mobley, 10th amongst front court players in the Eastern Conference. Notably, Darius Garland, not among the top 10 in Eastern Conference guards. And Jarrett Allen, not among the top 10 in Eastern Conference front court players. I had an issue with one of these things. Darius Garland, there's no way, shape, or form he's not been a top 10 guard in not only the Eastern Conference, the NBA this year. Like, I do believe he's somebody that is deserving of an All-Star nod. I don't think he's going to be named an All-Star, but I was disappointed to see him not in the top 10 yesterday, especially behind some of the names in the top 10. Like, Jordan Poole is in the top 10. Derek White of Boston is in the top 10. There are some names that you look at and say, yeah, that guy's a fine player, but Darius Garland is having a far superior season. LaMelo Ball being the number one vote getter amongst guards in the Eastern Conference is comical. Like, I get it. He's got a lot of fans. He's a very online type of player. There are a lot of kids that really love him. He is not one of the six or seven best guards in the Eastern Conference. It's not close. I will say, don't really have an issue with Jared Allen not being in the top 10. Don't have an issue there. Has he been good? Yeah, I don't think he's been. He's not had his best season. He's coming off of his best game on Tuesday over the Lakers, but he's not somebody that I look at and say, yeah, that guy absolutely needs to be an All-Star. Am I wrong for feeling that way?
I don't know. Are they being disrespected by not getting this popular
vote, right? I think that Darius Garland is. I think that I'm actually...
Are they holding last year against him?
Maybe.
Because he's playing better than his All-Star year that he had.
And it's not close. And it's not been close. Like, he is having the best game of his career by a best season of his career by a wide margin so far. I was pleasantly surprised Evan Mobley's in the top 10, because Evan Mobley's been a top 10 front court player in the Eastern Conference without a doubt. He should be an All-Star in the Eastern Conference, but he's not somebody that you watch and say, yeah, there's going to be a lot of people across the country that vote for that guy, right? That was the thing I was concerned about. So I was pleasantly surprised to see him in the top 10. A guy who was in the top 10 in All-Star voting is a guy who wants to change his scenery. That would be Jimmy Butler. He is none too pleased in Miami with the Heat.
I want to see me get my joy back from playing basketball. Wherever that may be, we'll find out here pretty soon. But I want to get my joy back. I'm happy here off the court, but I want to be back to somewhat dominant. I want to hoop, and I want to help this team win. Right now, I'm not doing it.
Can you get your joy back here on the court?
Probably not.
According to ESPN, Jimmy Butler has formally requested a trade from the Miami Heat. And unlike most times, guys, we see a trade request in the NBA. What's the most common part of it? Oh, this guy wants to go to Team X or Team Y. Like, they have a specific destination. And this is the part that made me laugh about this. Because Jimmy Butler has done that before when requesting trades out of places, which he's done several times in his career. He's open to playing anywhere that's not Miami. Which is a little refreshing, because you never hear that. You hear people say, you know, I'm willing to play anywhere that's not Detroit, or I'm willing to play anywhere that's not Minnesota or Milwaukee. No one ever says that about Miami. So things must be real bad if that's where Jimmy Butler and the Heat are at.
He did say he's enjoying himself off the court in Miami.
Well, who wouldn't? It's Miami. Who wouldn't be enjoying themselves off the court? Anthony Lima enjoys himself off the court down in Miami. Everyone knows that.
We had George Yang a few weeks ago explaining how fun it is down at the 305.
Have you ever been to the 305, Mitch?
I have.
Yeah. It's a fun place. Jimmy Butler straight up not having a good time on the floor right now, though.
Do you think he'd go back to Minnesota?
God, I do, because I think the people he had a problem with in Minnesota are no longer in Minnesota. The bigger question is, would he go to New York? Because that's where the people that he had a problem with are. Miami would trade him to New York. And I am very curious to see how Miami operates with this. Are they going to take the best offer for him, or are they just going to hang on? Because Jimmy Butler has shown throughout his career that he is very willing to get uncomfortable. The Miami Heat have shown throughout their history they are very willing to get uncomfortable. I don't know if this situation is going to end with a trade. He can be a free agent at the end of the season. He can opt out of his contract and would leave right around $52 million on the table to do so. I wonder if that's the most likely outcome here, is that instead of Miami trading Jimmy Butler, this just gets real ugly for the rest of the season.
I don't know. If I'm Pat Riley, I call his bluff. I don't think he's leaving $52 million on the table.
I don't know who else is giving him that money either. Like, Jimmy Butler's not it. He's a good basketball player, and he's somebody that has proven himself in the playoffs. I don't think you can win a title with him as your best player, but he's proven himself to be a dude that will step up when the postseason arrives. And there's no doubting that. And teams will want that. But are you going to pay $52 million for that as he enters his age 36 season? I'm not.
I went straight to trade machine to figure out what's Cavs? Going on for the Cavs. I mean, I don't care about any of the other teams in the NBA, so.
I do want to dive into that. We're going to do that coming up a little bit later on in the show, probably around 7:20. We'll talk, should the Cavs not only make a trade, but does Jimmy Butler factor into this at all? I think that's, there are people that will certainly believe so because we live in a transactional world. Like, that's what they care about are the transactions of the NBA, and Jimmy Butler's a big name. And listen, I get it. But, man, I don't know who's going to want to pay him $52 million next year in his age 36 season. It's not a, that's not a business I'd want to sign up to be in. That's not where I would want to be if I'm running a basketball team. Call me crazy. But that's where we're at with Jimmy Butler. That is where we are at with everything that happened last night in the world of sports, of course. Well, there were enough reps for Bailey Zappe. He's going to be the starting quarterback for the Browns this Saturday when they take on the Baltimore Ravens in the finally season finale of this just wretched season for the Cleveland Browns. Zappe becomes starting quarterback number 40 since the Browns returned to action in 1999. I don't know where he ranks amongst the 40 quarterbacks. We don't have time to do a 40 quarterback power ranking, Owen. That's not on the docket for today. So you don't play the
three
music.
3 hours and 15 minutes. Let's go.
I am going to ask Daryl, actually. Have that ready when Daryl's on at 8. I'm going to ask him to power rank his Week 18 starting quarterbacks for the Browns. That is where we need to go with this.
I absolutely agree with that.
That's where we need to go with this. But Zappe is, he's going to be another name on the list, on the quarterback jersey, on the list of guys to forget that have played quarterback for the Browns. Or he also could become one of the best ironic Browns jerseys in the history of the Cleveland Browns to own. But this is a weird situation because I don't think that he's somebody that factors into the Browns, not plans, but roster even next year. When you look at what this quarterback room is going to be, I just don't see where he fits in, if at all. I'm not sure I see where Dorian Thompson-Robinson fits in at all. And I think it is time, it's past time really, to start looking at what that might look like next year because Deshaun Watson is not it. We know that he's going to be on the roster because he's owed $46 million next year and whatever his cap charge is going to be. Like, there's just not a way out of that, unfortunately, for the Browns. So he'll be around, but if I had to bet, he's going to be the only one from this season's roster in that quarterback room that's back next year. And it makes me think who could be, who's going to be number 41? And I do wish that number 40 would be starting game one next year in week one, because I don't think that guy's on the roster right now. And I think it's a very prestigious honor that Bailey Zappe gets to be the 40th starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. But I don't think the guy that's going to be number 41 is on the roster. I wonder about the possibilities of who it could be. I think that there are a number of different options. And I think the one that intrigues me the most, and there are a couple of different guys I want to talk about, but the one that intrigues me the most is probably in Atlanta right now, and that's Kirk Cousins. Could he be on the Browns? I think it's possible. And Kirk Cousins, the football player, does not excite me. I don't think he's a very exciting quarterback. I think he's a fine quarterback. He's not great. He's not terrible. He didn't have a good year coming off an Achilles surgery, and maybe he won't be good ever again. But what he can be for the Browns, which is a very low bar, is he can be competent. And the thing that excites me is, look at what happened just across the state border in Pennsylvania this year with the Steelers, where, yeah, they went out. Their big money quarterback acquisition was actually Justin Fields. He's the guy in the quarterback room for them that the Steelers are paying the most. They're paying Russell Wilson next to nothing because Russell Wilson's getting all his money from Denver. Kirk Cousins is going to be getting all his money this offseason from the Atlanta Falcons. If the Browns want to have Kirk Cousins on the roster next year, I think it's a very similar situation to what Pittsburgh's doing. Now, can Kirk Cousins summon the same type of football that Russell Wilson has been able to conjure up this year after looking pretty lost as a quarterback the last several years? I don't know. We'll have to wait and find out. But I think we're at the point where I think he's the most likely guy. If I had to place money on who's going to be the starting quarterback for the Browns week one next year, I think Kirk Cousins is probably the most likely guy. I do. And I don't know if that's exactly the path forward that the Browns are going to take or need to be taking, but I think that it's something that is very possible. Here's what ESPN's Jeremy Fowler said about this situation on Baskin and Phelps yesterday.
If it's a Russell Wilson situation where they move on with the guaranteed money and have no leverage to trade him, and so Atlanta's stuck to the reality that on an offset language, they can, you know, a new team can sign him for $1 million, I absolutely think that that's on the table, yes. I don't think they would pay a lot of money for Kirk Cousins based on what he did this year, but he's had success with Kevin.
I don't think anyone should or would pay, to Jeremy Fowler's point there, a lot of money because of what Kirk Cousins has done this year. But I think it's a unique situation that we haven't seen a ton. Like, we've not seen this a lot in an NFL history. We've seen it in recent history with Russell Wilson in Pittsburgh. But I think that's the situation that you want to most closely mirror. Because what Pittsburgh's been able to do is then spend money elsewhere on the roster. This is not a get out of jail free card for the Browns in terms of cap management. But if you're allotting a certain amount of money to the quarterback room, you need to have somebody that can play. And right now the Browns are allotting a lot of money to that room. They don't have anybody that's capable of playing right now because Deshaun Watson ain't it. We all know that at this point. They don't have somebody that's a starting caliber quarterback. But if you add a $1 to $2 million deal for Kirk Cousins to that room, it looks a lot better. You feel a lot better about it. And then maybe you do go out and Justin Fields is going to be a free agent. Maybe you sign him. And he's a lottery ticket. Maybe he can be somebody that can be part of the future for this Browns quarterback room. I have some serious doubts about him as a quarterback, but I think that that has to be the path forward for the Browns. Bailey Zappi is going to be it for this week. And then I think that the guys that are active this week for the Browns, Zappi, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, Jameis Winston is QB3. None of those three guys are going to be back in Cleveland next year. Feel pretty strongly about that. But I do think the most likely outcome, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe there's something I don't see, and I'd love to find out if there is. But I think the clearest path forward that I can find for the Browns in the quarterback room right now is Kirk Cousins. It's not the most exciting thing in the world, but it might just be the path forward, the way out of Deshaun Watson. That might be the direction the Browns have to go.
But when you say the way out of Deshaun Watson, I get that that's the main priority right now, but that doesn't help the Browns in 2 years, 3 years from now, right?
It depends.
Unless we're going to go through another slug of a season.
I mean, next year.
And wait around for Arch Manning.
Next year is not going to be the most exciting year, I don't think, in Browns football history. I don't think it's going to be as bad as this year. Like, it's not going to be. If they sign Kirk Cousins.
This is one of the worst.
Yes. It's not going to be the. I think they have too much talent to do this again, because you look at this roster and why are they 3-13? They're 3-13 because they've done some dumb stuff, but they're 3-13 most because they've gotten the worst quarterback play in football. I don't know that there's a team in the NFL right now that has gotten worse quarterback play this specific season than the Cleveland Browns have. That I think is why they're 3-13. And if Kirk Cousins comes in and is competent, I'm not saying the Browns are going to be Super Bowl contenders next year, but I also don't think they're going to be contenders for the top pick in the draft. That said, if they get the top pick in the draft this year and they trade that pick back and pick up more draft ammunition and finish in the middle of the pack next year, that could be your answer to solving the quarterback position. But having Kirk Cousins here for a year could be something that smooths over the most important part of this whole conversation, is that it's a plan you can give to Myles Garrett, because that is something you have to do this offseason.
You think Kirk Cousins is the thing that tells Myles Garrett that we're on track with what you need, Miles?
I think it's the thing that says we care, that we're, that what happened this year was unacceptable.
I agree with that.
You think that comes, well, what's a better answer for Miles then?
For Miles, I don't know that there's a better answer. For me personally, and I can't believe I brought the guy up 2 weeks ago, and I can't believe I'm saying his name still. I would rather have Mac Jones.
Kirk. Really?
Yeah. Only because I do the potential there. And I get that we've seen Kevin and Kirk Cousins together before, and it was good for that season.
I do think
I'm not a big Mac Jones fan either. But
no one
I
is.
Just think from age-wise and what we've seen around the league, when you look at Sam Darnold, Jared Goff, Baker Mayfield, you know, guys finding new life in different cities, I would rather see that than to see a guy who has done the different city thing for, and not necessarily new life. He did it for money.
Right.
Go out and Kirk Cousins had a great run, especially for a guy who was the second quarterback drafted by the team that drafted him in that draft. He ended up being the longevity guy between him and RG3.
Right.
But I would much rather see somebody that maybe has some sort of NFL future over Kirk Cousins, just in case they do win, because they do have talent, because they had 9 guys that made Pro Bowl or were alternates and end up not being able to get one of those top quarterbacks in the draft the following year.
And I think that bet would probably be a bet on Kevin Stefanski. If you're going to make that bet on a guy like that, you're not betting on that player. You're betting on Kevin Stefanski to get the most out of him, just like maybe he could get the most out of Kirk Cousins. I don't know what that future holds, but I think that's probably the direction this team's going to look into. So you mentioned Myles Garrett. You mentioned 9 Pro Bowlers. Myles Garrett's had a great season. But what does that actually say about the Browns? Is it a good thing that despite being 3-13, Myles Garrett could win Defensive Player of the Year? I think it's a really interesting place to be.